Thank you, Lizanne, for the lesson, and thank you, musicians, for the cantata this morning, and for sharing your gifts with us in worship. And with so many musicians with us this morning, I'm going to ask a trivia question that I bet almost all of you will get right away. What are the very first words that are sung in Handel's Messiah? The very first words that are sung. Comfort ye, O comfort ye, my people, saith your God. And those are the opening verses in Isaiah chapter 40. The first 39 chapters of Isaiah are most associated with Isaiah of Jerusalem in the 8th century BCE, when that prophet was warning about the dangers to come, about the dangers from the Assyrians to the north, about the dangers of potential exile. And then more than a century after Isaiah of Jerusalem died, the Babylonians came in 597, ransacking Jerusalem. And then in 587, they completely destroyed Jerusalem and took many exiles with them. And they were in exile for 70 years. And at the end of the 70 years of exile, we have the voice of a new prophet in that Isaiah tradition, Isaiah of the exile. And this new prophet quotes God directly as saying, "Comfort ye, O comfort my people." So this is Isaiah chapter 40, and I'm going to read verses 1 through 5. "Comfort, O comfort my people, says your God. Speak tenderly to Jerusalem and cry to her that she has served her term, that her penalty is paid, that she has received from the Lord's hand double for all her sins. A voice cries out, 'In the wilderness, prepare the way of the Lord. Make straight in the desert a highway for our God. Every valley shall be lifted up, and every mountain and hill be made low. The uneven ground shall become level, and the rough places a plain. Then the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. For the mouth of the Lord has spoken.'" The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. I remember a story that someone shared with me many years ago about how she came back to church after being gone for a very long time. She grew up in Westminster, Colorado, just north of Denver, and she was very active in church all through her childhood and teenage years. And then she went off to college and graduate school, got married. She came back to the area, but she didn't go back to church. And she and her husband raised their only child. And when it was almost time for their child to go to college herself, she decided to go back to Westminster Presbyterian Church and to worship with them for the first time in well over 20 years. And she was very nervous about going back. What would the people say? But she sat down, and then someone that she recognized sat down next to her, clasped her by the hand, and said, "Welcome home." And what a deep relief it was to hear those words, that the very first words that someone spoke to her after she had been gone for so long were words of comfort and welcome. Not, "Where have you been all this time?" Or, "You moved back to Westminster how many years ago and you're just now coming back to church?" No, none of that. Simply words of comfort. And what an important lesson it is that our first words should be words of comfort. And they should be words of comfort that are actually comforting. If we want our words of comfort to actually offer comfort, they need to acknowledge how hard the journey has been. Notice what God says in this passage. God doesn't nonchalantly or casually say to the people, yeah, you had a raw deal, now it's time to move on. Instead, the voice of God says, "Speak tenderly to Jerusalem and cry to her that her penalty is paid and that she has received from the Lord's hand double for all her sins. And this comes from the voice of God. It doesn't come from the prophet saying, yeah, God, you really punished them way overboard. No, God is saying that you have been punished twice for anything that you might have deserved. And an acknowledgement of that pain of the journey is so key for words of comfort to be genuinely comforting. And the second thing that words of comfort need in order to be really comforting is to acknowledge the difficulty of the journey ahead. This passage announces good news, how the exile is over, and how God will lift up every valley and make the mountains low. But in order for the exile to be truly over, the people themselves have to make that long journey from Babylon back to Jerusalem. And of course, history tells us that many of them chose not to make that journey. But our words of comfort need to honestly acknowledge the difficulty of what lies ahead. Old Testament scholar Walter Brueggemann once defined comfort, the comfort in this Isaiah passage, like this: that it is a transformative solidarity, a powerful intervention that creates new possibilities. It's a solidarity in the sense that we're all in this together, and it's a powerful intervention in the sense that we wait for God to create the new possibilities for us to seize upon. And that's why we often say that this season of Advent is an active waiting. It is not a passive waiting. It is a waiting because by faith we believe that only God can lift up valleys and flatten mountains. We can't do that on our own. But it's an active waiting, because it is still up to us to put one foot in front of the other and make the journey ahead. And in thinking about this passage, I wonder, who are the exiles today? In particular, who are the religious exiles today? And many years ago, when I was in law school and thinking about dropping out of law school to go to seminary, and we all know how that story ended, I found myself church shopping in Austin, Texas, all kinds of different churches. And I found a very unusual church. It was a progressive to moderate Baptist megachurch. And they had a very simple mission statement. And their mission statement was that we exist to welcome the bruised, the battered, the broken, and the bored. And I love that. I love alliteration, first of all, but I loved everything that symbolized. That here we are as a faith community who are eager to welcome the bruised, the battered, the broken, and the bored. Eager to welcome those who have been bruised and battered even by religion. To welcome those who had been broken by life. To welcome those who are bored. Perhaps they had been very successful in their lives but not yet found what it means to be significant. Or maybe they're even bored with religion. They're bored with expressions of Christianity that kind of go through the motions or superficial, but don't really ask the question of what it means to be a disciple of Jesus Christ in today's world. And they're looking for a faith that will engage them. And I believe that Covenant is such a place, because I know from your own stories that many of you have been bruised, battered, broken, and bored in one way or another. And you found a home here. And as we enter a new year, I look forward to brainstorming with all of us together how we might continue to welcome those who feel exiled from the faith, how we might continue to welcome the bruised, the battered, the broken, and the bored. And I look forward to them joining us in worship, and we can then clasp them by the hand, look them in the eye, and say, "Welcome home." All glory and praise be to our God. Amen. At this time, we share joys and concerns.